From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to the program, broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio. And today is a big show. I have a very special guest, the Lieutenant Governor of Nebraska, Mike Foley, will be joining me in just a moment to walk us through the opening days of the Nebraska legislature and what he and the governor are doing to protect life and liberty here in Nebraska. The state legislature is now off and running. Bill introduction is over. Hundreds of pieces of legislation have been introduced. Committee hearings are beginning. And the session is beginning to take shape as senators continue debate on big issues. This past week, a bill to legalize gambling on fantasy sports contests failed, as did a proposal to repeal Nebraska's motorcycle helmet law. And we know there will be plenty of more debates on a wide range of issues, but what appears to be the dominant discussion in this year's session is going to be tax reform and the state budget. But included in that state budget is a very important pro-life initiative to ensure that taxpayer dollars are not subsidizing the abortion industry. And who better to have on the show to talk about these big issues than the person responsible for helping achieve the governor's policy objectives and presiding over the state legislature? I'm honored to be joined now by the Lieutenant Governor of Nebraska, Mike Foley. Lieutenant Governor, thanks for being on the show today.
Nate, thanks so much for inviting me to be on. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
Lieutenant Governor, this is a busy time of year with the state legislature back in session, and we recently heard a state of state address from the governor. What were some of the key highlights or takeaways from that state of state address?
Yes, the governor's state of the state address was roughly a week ago, and he set forth a very bold vision for where he wants to take the state and highlighting some key areas. First, of course, is the state budget situation. Our agricultural economy, which is really the backbone, it's our premier industry, has hit a kind of a rough patch. And commodity prices are low, and our farmers are incredibly hardworking and productive, but the amount of money that they get for the crops that they raise and the cattle and livestock that they raise is rather low compared to historical norms. So the farm economy has taken a rough hit, and total farm income just 4 years ago was about $7.5 billion. This most recent year was down to about $4 billion. So $3.5 billion of farm income vanished in a very short period of time. And of course, when farmers aren't making as much money, it hits every shop on Main Street. And it also hits the state budget, because when farmers and other businesses are not making as much money, they're paying fewer dollars in taxes. So the state budget situation is not properly balanced at this time. We've got roughly a $200 million shortfall. So the governor's put forth a great package of just some very, very moderate reductions in spending, 2% reduction this year, 4% next year. And if we all just tighten our belts a little bit, we can get that budget back into balance and we'll be in good shape. So all of that has been handed off to our Appropriations Committee. It's a 9-member committee, and they meet many, many hours over several months, and they will study the governor's proposal and perhaps adjust it in certain ways and then come up with a different package and then bring that forward to the legislature and debate it. And ultimately, it will come to the governor's desk for his review. So we think if the legislature would focus on that state budget situation, which I know they will, and get it back into balance, it will be a very, very good day for our state. We're hoping that things will start to turn around. The December tax revenues were actually quite good. But some of that, and we're not sure how much, but some of that was certainly adjusted because of the consumer response, taxpayer response to the federal tax law changes. Some people were paying their taxes earlier than normal. So the December numbers looked really good, but some of that was just because of the federal tax law change. So within another month or two, we'll have a better feel for where we are financially. And the state forecasting board will meet at the end of February, and they will adjust the official forecast of revenue for the state, and then we'll set the budget accordingly. So that's one of the big issues. Another big issue that the governor focused on was tax policy. The governor and I have the privilege and pleasure of traveling all across the state. We've been everywhere, and it's just a great joy to be able to do that, to meet the people of Nebraska and hear from them on what their key concerns are. And one of the concerns we've been hearing for several years now is the property tax system in our state. It's a very, very difficult public policy question because the state itself does not set the property tax. The state does not derive any revenue from the property tax. Property tax is used to fund local government. But the state does have a lot to say about the rules, about how the property tax system works. And the governor, in his short time in office, has put hundreds of millions of dollars into the property tax credit program, which does make a good down payment on lowering those property taxes for our farmers and ranchers, really everybody. But it's still, we know it's not enough. We've got to do more. So the governor has been working in recent months with Senator Jim Smith, who chairs the Revenue Committee in the legislature, and he's also been working with all the major agricultural groups, the business groups, and so forth, and they've put together a tax package, which we think would make a lot of headway towards solving this property tax dilemma that our state faces. We had other legislation a year ago, which didn't quite get across the finish line, so we're coming right back at it again this year, and we'll hope for better results. If we can get this tax bill through, it would provide a lot of relief to all taxpayers, in addition to a little bit of corporate tax relief, a little bit of personal income tax relief, and then a whole lot of property tax relief. This bill differs from last year's bill in that it's much more heavily tilted toward property tax relief as opposed to income tax relief. So the budget and the taxes are the two big ticket items in the legislature this session, and many other issues as well, but those are the two big ticket items that we'll be talking about.
Well, I appreciate you walking us through that and giving us some insight into Governor Ricketts and his administration and what you all are doing to work on those two issues, as you mentioned, which will dominate this session. And I wanted to ask you about something else, another issue that I know is very important to you. Governor Ricketts also declared in his State of the State address very boldly that Nebraska is a pro-life state. And I would agree with him. Nebraska is a pro-life state. But to have a governor really proclaim that in a State of the State address, I think was new and very encouraging. Why is that issue on the life issue so important to yourself and the governor's administration?
Well, great question. And as I mentioned earlier, the governor and I do travel across the state constantly, and we hear from people about what their concerns are. And there's just no question in my mind that Nebraska is indeed a pro-life state. We hear that wherever we go. And it's kind of a curiosity that over the years, in our budget setting process, we've been sending some federal program dollars to abortion centers. And this is really very unsettling for many, many people. So we've offered some language in the state budget bill to make an adjustment to something called the Title X program, which would simply declare that if you perform abortions or counsel in favor of abortions, that type of an organization would have to make some structural changes, some corporate changes, to completely segregate the abortion side of their business from other aspects of the business to make sure that none of these Title X dollars in any way would subsidize the practice of abortion. And it's simply, just as the governor says, we are a pro-life state, and our budget setting process should reflect the values of our people. And there's been some allegations leveled against the administration claiming that, you know, 8,000 women or something like that would lose health care services. That's not true at all. Every single community that's now receiving these Title X dollars would continue to be eligible for those dollars. We would just have to ensure that they don't perform abortions within the business that's receiving those dollars.
Well, this is such an important issue. It's sort of the issue of life intersects with taxpayer dollars, and this is such a crucial initiative to ensure that tax dollars aren't funding abortion. And you're saying that through this Title X program, people don't need to worry about collateral damage or people losing access to health care. This is just making sure that our state laws and how we disperse this federal money is really in line with federal code and not allowing those dollars to fund abortion.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. The federal government has made it very clear that these dollars cannot be used for abortions. So we need to make sure that we build in the appropriate safeguards so that we're properly spending those federal dollars for the intended purpose, and they're not in some way being used to subsidize the practice of abortion. That's consistent with our values, and it's absolutely consistent with the federal regulations. In Congress, just a year or so ago, enacted House Joint Resolution Number 43, which gives the states more flexibility, more latitude in setting policies on how to disperse the Title X dollars. And that was a hotly debated issue in Congress, and we're pleased that the Congress took that action and President Trump signed that into law. So now we'll just move forward and implement the new regulations and properly spend those federal Title X dollars in a way that's consistent with what Congress has intended.
Well, I appreciate you explaining what exactly this Title X initiative would do. There's a lot of hyperbole out there that I think is misleading, and I know you've explained it, but what do people need to know about what the governor is actually trying to do with this policy and why it really is the appropriate thing to do?
Well, the most important thing that I think people need to understand about this is that every single person who is today receiving Title X services will continue to have full access to those services. We're simply requiring that that no organization that performs or counsels in favor of abortion receive those dollars, because there needs to be an appropriate segregation between the abortion side of a business and the other health aspects of an agency's business. And if agencies don't do abortions and don't counsel for abortion, there's nothing to be concerned about. They go on, life goes on just as it always has. They can continue to serve all the same people. And as I said earlier, every single community that is getting Title X dollars currently will continue to receive Title X dollars. Just we have to make sure that we properly spend these dollars so they're not in any way getting tangled up into the practice of abortion.
Well, this is, it's sound, sensible policy, and I know Nebraska Family Alliance is very excited about it and proud to help support it. Lieutenant Governor, pro-life, being pro-life has been something that you have really championed your entire career. Why are those pro-life values so important to you?
Well, pro-life values are very, very important to me. When I was a state senator for 6 years, some time ago, I spent a lot of time working on the pro-life issue. We made some progress, and it's an inch-by-inch concept. You just got to keep whittling away at it and do everything you can to defend human life wherever possible. And last year, for example, we had a bill in that was successfully enacted, which creates a brand new license plate. People can now go out to the Department of Motor Vehicles, and for an extra $5, they can get a Choose Life license plate. It's a very, very attractive plate. It's now available. In fact, I ordered a couple for my cars. I haven't gotten them yet, but I've ordered them. Should have them in a few days, and I'll be proudly placing them on my car. So everything we can do to enhance the cause of life is also good, and it's certainly consistent with the values of the people of Nebraska. Many other states have the Choose Life license plate. I think 29 other states have it. And many other states have properly addressed this Title X issue as well. And I think it's time for Nebraska to do what other states have already done, to protect those dollars so that women are still receiving their health care services, but that the dollars are not being improperly used to fund abortion.
Well, I stand with you on that, and I know thousands of Nebraskans all across the state do as well. Another area that you have really been a champion for and defender of is religious freedom. And just this last week, Governor Ricketts held a special ceremony and proclamation signing acknowledging Religious Freedom Day on January 16th. What does religious freedom mean to you, and why is it so vital that we are always watchful to defend our most cherished freedom?
Yeah, I was so proud of the governor earlier this week when he signed a proclamation acknowledging our religious freedoms. This is very, very important. I think it's going to become an emerging issue nationwide. As we know, there's a case pending right now in the U.S. Supreme Court regarding a baker who did not want to bake a wedding cake for a certain couple. And it's not a Nebraska case per se, but it could have repercussions for our state. So we're watching that very carefully. But there are more and more of these kinds of cases where people who simply want to exercise their religious freedoms and serve people in various ways have their freedoms protected. And that's what this proclamation was really all about. We know of adoption agencies throughout the country that have had to close their doors and stop offering children for adoption in very, very good homes because of the restrictions on their religious liberties. And they've just said it's because of the cost of litigation and so forth, they just have to get out of the adoption business. And that's not good for the public, and it's not good for children who need to be placed into loving families. So religious liberty, I think, is going to be a core issue out into the future. And I was just so proud of the governor for signing that proclamation earlier this week.
Well, religious freedom certainly is the bedrock of our society and our country, and really the cornerstone of all of our other freedoms. So it is so encouraging to have religious freedom so strongly, not just defended, but really championed here in our state. Lieutenant Governor, one of the, I think, most unique duties of the Lieutenant Governor is presiding over the Nebraska legislature. What is that like for you, having a front row seat to the action and interacting with the state legislature on a day-to-day basis?
Well, it's a fascinating experience. As I mentioned earlier, I was a state senator for 6 years, and because there were more senior members in the legislature at that time, I never had the opportunity to actually preside over the legislature. But now, as Lieutenant Governor, this is one of the constitutional functions of my office. So I'm typically in the legislature every day, presiding as much as possible. And it gives me kind of a bird's eye view of what the senators are talking about, what are the arrangements and the compromises that are being brokered. And I'm watching legislation being shaped every single day. And it gives me a good vantage point on how the legislative process is functioning and how it's impacting the governor's goals. Because as I mentioned earlier, he does have some very, very key goals, for some very ambitious goals for this session. So we need to work very carefully with the senators, and it's important for me to be there so that I understand the concerns that the senators have. There are 49 independent senators, and they have their own ideas of where they want to take the state, and we need to work with them to forge policy that's in the best interest of all Nebraskans.
And what do you think that we can expect to see from this legislature? They've just surpassed the 10-day mark of a 60-day session, so bill introduction is now over and committee hearings are starting. What do you think that Nebraskans can expect to see from their legislature this year?
Well, you're right, Nate. Today was the 10th day, and we've now passed the point where senators can introduce bills. So there's about 450 new bills added to the 667, I think it was, last year. many of which are still being held over for the second year on a two-year cycle. So there's literally hundreds and hundreds of bills out there with lots of interesting ideas on policy. So we're studying them just as all the senators are. The afternoon hearing processes have started, and there's all the committees are in full swing, holding public hearings on every single bill. And it will be interesting to see which bills make it out of committee and which bills receive a priority designation from the various senators. And as those priority designations are made, we'll know which bills will be on the floor for the full debate of the full legislature. So right now we're only in session on the floor in the mornings, and then in the afternoon the senators are in their committees having public hearings on all these bills. So some of those bills will make it to the floor, others will not, and of course the state budget's got to come back to the floor later this session, and I'm sure there'll be a very robust conversation about the Title X proposal that's included in the budget, and we'll just see where it all goes from there. But it's going to be an interesting session, and we're already 10 days into it, and it's a short session. So by mid-April, it'll be all over. It goes by very, very quickly.
Well, there is a lot to keep an eye on and for citizens to be aware of. So, Lieutenant Governor, I thank you for your time today and giving us a window into the governor's administration, all the work that you are doing to help protect life and liberty and grow Nebraska.
Well, thanks, Nate. It's been a pleasure to be on the air with you. God bless.
If you would like more information on the Nebraska legislature, bills that have been introduced, and updates on the issues affecting you and your family, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, where you will find information, resources, prayer guides, policy updates, articles, educational videos, and everything you need to be empowered with the information to make a difference here in Nebraska to help advance family, freedom, and life. Nebraska Family Alliance is the state affiliate of Focus on the Family in Your Life for pro-family, pro-life, and pro-religious freedom values at the state capitol. We are working every day to help create a state where marriages and families thrive, life is cherished and protected, and religious liberty is affirmed and celebrated. Stay up to date on the issues that affect your family by joining the NFA email network. Visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. where you can sign up to receive emails and get updates on the issues you care about most. And one of those issues that Nebraskans are so passionate about and we fight for at Nebraska Family Alliance is to advance our pro-life values and protect and defend unborn human life. And this past Friday marked the National March for Life in Washington, D.C. in which hundreds of thousands of people from all across the United States gathered at our nation's capital to march for life. This annual event has become an incredibly powerful show and demonstration of not just what we're opposed to, but what we're for, the love and support for both babies and their mothers. It was an extraordinary event and just shows how broad the support is for the pro-life movement and showing love to both the mother and the baby and ensuring that our policies protect our most vulnerable and innocent. Every human life should be treated with dignity and respect and be given their God-given right to life. And this movement to ensure that every child has the opportunity to reach their God-given potential is growing, and it is making a huge difference. More mothers are choosing life for their babies. Abortion rates are hitting historic lows, and more all across the country, pro-life laws are being passed to protect the unborn. And there will be an opportunity to showcase the support for the pro-life movement here in Nebraska this upcoming Saturday. January 27th will be the Nebraska March for Life at 10 a.m. at our state capitol in Lincoln. You do not want to miss this. Join with thousands of other pro-life Nebraskans to March for Life. Again, next Saturday, January 27th, 10 a.m. at the state capitol. There will be thousands of people there. Nebraska's elected officials will be there to champion the pro-life movement and to stand for mothers and their babies and to march for life. It's an event the Nebraska Family Alliance is proud to support and help promote, and we're expecting to see another huge turnout and thousands of people, and we hope to see you there. And we had some extraordinary news. President Donald Trump became the first ever sitting United States president to address the National March for Life, and he shared some very loving and inspiring and hopeful words about the pro-life movement and its impact all across the country. This was really historic. No other president has addressed the March for Life, even though it's such a huge monumental march with hundreds of thousands of people. So this really marked a historic moment to have the sitting United States president address the March for Life. And this is just part of what President Trump shared just a few days ago at the National March for Life in Washington, D.C.
Today, tens of thousands of families, students, and patriots, and really just great citizens, gather here in our nation's capital. You come from many backgrounds, many places, but you all come for one beautiful cause: to build a society where life is celebrated, protected, and cherished. The March for Life is a movement born out of love. You love your families. You love your neighbors, you love our nation, and you love every child, born and unborn, because you believe that every life is sacred, that every child is a precious gift from God. We know that life is the greatest miracle of all. We see it in the eyes of every new mother who cradles that wonderful, innocent, and glorious newborn child in her loving arms. I want to thank every person here today and all across our country who works with such big hearts and tireless devotion to make sure that parents have the care and support they need to choose life. Because of you, tens of thousands of Americans have been born and reached their full God-given potential because of you. You're living witnesses of this year's March for Life theme, and that theme is Love Saves Lives.
Inspiring words from President Trump addressing the National March for Life from the Rose Garden just a few days ago. And I hope that we will see a lot of our listeners next Saturday at the Nebraska March for Life, 10 a.m. at the state capitol. Come join with thousands of other Nebraskans marching for life. For more information, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org and learn how you can help protect and restore the foundation of our country, the family. I'm your host, Nate Graz, hoping you'll join us next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.